We don't want to belabor this time, but we also want to give opportunity for questions. This may be a little awkward. It's always easier to, you know, text in questions, but we're not going to do that, obviously, or not doing that. And but we do want to hear from you if there's things that you want to ask us, or maybe something to be clarified, or something along those lines. And again, we'll take as much time as we need. If you do need to head on out, you can feel free to do that. Just do that quietly. But we do have some time, I believe, right now. Yeah, we got plenty of time. So any questions that you may have regarding anything or something we didn't hit or hit? It's always scary, isn't it? Give me a break.
All right. What were Norman's 25-year-old non-negotiables?
Talk radio.
You know what? That's a great question. Is that Riley?
Yeah.
The question is, what were Norman's 25-year-old non-negotiables? I'll preface this by stating that I never had an opportunity like this when I was 25. Didn't have anybody that really spoke into my life, took some time. My dad never sat down with me. I didn't have a youth pastor or, a leader. I had some good leaders, but none of them ever sat down with me. My non-negotiables when I was 25, probably at that point, kind of watch it, physically speaking. But I didn't have any hard and fast rules, which I regret. Certainly, in terms of my relationships, including my relationship with my now wife, didn't have intercourse. Are there things that I regretted in terms of physical relationships, including my relationship with my then girlfriend Nicole? My non-negotiables included, dating, marrying only a Christian. But I never had, it was one of those things like typical relationships back then when I was at that age, sort of more reactive instead of proactive, which is not a good way of doing it because, once it's the law of diminishing returns, right? You get into situations and it's tough to go backwards. And so, I don't think I had anything like that. I didn't have anything set. There's some big rock stuff again, dating, marrying a believer and watching it when it came to the physical and not having intercourse, but I didn't have anything set in mind and didn't talk about it on the front end. And there's a lot of things that, there's a lot of things when it comes to, I think the advantages of things like this to consider, I think that are good things. And one of the reasons why we do it. Other questions? Yeah.
Okay. Do you think a man should have to ask for a woman?
Who are you asking, me or Laura? You want to go?
Wow. The question is, do you think a man should have to ask out a woman? Are you asking me because you want to ask someone out?
No.
Okay. I think it's probably the ideal. I don't really know why I think that. I don't know if I think that because of culture. I do think it's best in that, as a girl, it's good to know that a guy actually wants to date you because that, I think that's a good thing. I think it's good for guys to kind of have to step out of their comfort zone and do it. Sorry. I don't have any hard and fast thoughts about it, but I think it's a good idea. You have a better answer for sure.
No, I don't. I think generally yes. I think it's good from my perspective. Generally yes. Are there exceptions? Certainly, but they have to be good exceptions. You know what I mean?
I have one exception.
Okay, good.
I would say if you ask at a guy once, and then you have to keep asking, that's not a good sign. Yeah. But if you ask him out once and it kind of just gets him into the place where he could ask you, then he has the, strength or whatever to ask you out more. That's okay. But I wouldn't keep asking him out. Ask him out once. Once is a good rule.
Yeah, again, just I think generally, yes. I think it's a good thing for men to ask women out. But I think, yeah, there are exceptions. But they're exceptional. That's why they're exceptions.
Exactly.
But do I think there's anything biblically that you would hold to and say men have to ask women out? No, I don't think there's a verse that would point to it. I think there are general premises that you could look at or guidelines that would, you know, speak to the leadership of a male that I get hammered on, and we get hammered on here a lot. But I think men should generally be the one that asks. But if there are, again, exceptions, I think that's okay. I don't think it's wrong. Yeah. So... My first conversation with my wife, we were working here. This is how I asked her out. I took her to the beach and I said, "I'm attracted to you. Will you go out with me?" that's what I said. I said exactly that. And she said, "Have you been praying about it?" And I said, "Nope." And she said, and she's right here. She can correct me.
She's
said,
nodding.
Well, I have, and yes, it would be okay. So that was how I asked.
Aww.
Isn't that great? Yeah. So I believe in just being very straightforward and not beating around the bush. So if you're attracted to someone, tell them you're attracted. I'm attracted to you. You're attractive. You're attractive. Question in the back.
How do you respond to people who continually ask you why you're not married?
Oh. I thought I would remember this. I did. I said, "Chad, I'll remember this part." The question is, how do you respond to people who continually ask you or repeatedly ask you, "Why aren't you married?" Hilarious, actually. I went on a blind date one time that Norm Funk actually crashed. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And
that's right.
Yeah.
I like crashing things like that. It's funny.
So funny. And so I'm on this blind date with this guy, and he talked about himself for an entire hour. And the only question he asked me was, "Well, why aren't you married?" And in my head, in my head, I was like, "Well, I know why you aren't." And so, but in the other questions that I have, "Why aren't you married?" If it's the right venue, I honestly will say, this is not something God has brought into my life yet. I haven't met the right person. Along those lines, I really do try to bring my relationship with God into the answer, because it does. My answer reflects whether or not I do believe that God's plan is God is sovereign in His plan for my life, and so that way, I have definitely gone down the road of, you know, "Well, this is wrong with me," or "This is wrong with them," or whatever. But bottom line is, I believe that God is sovereign and that He has a plan, and it's way better than what I could conjure up on my own. Yep.
Yeah.
Outside of babysitting, how can we single out married people, encourage the married people within the church, and what do we do poorly in that aspect?
What do you do poorly? So the question is, how can we as single people encourage the married people, and what do we do poorly? Oh, man. I can only use the context of West Side. I think the single people of West Side are unbelievable. I mean, I just do. I think they're fantastic. And I think, you know, West Side does well simply because the high majority of single people at West Side serve well, encourage much. To be real, I guess to be specific, other than, you know, to be practical, other than babysitting, I don't know if I can point to much. I would say this.
Cash.
Cash. I think one of the things that I get hit as a preacher and a teacher in terms of my applications, you know, which I don't use a lot in terms of personal stories for a reason, but I don't use a lot of personal stories, but my life is as a married dad who's a pastor. And so my illustrations are usually about marriage and being a kid, or having kids and being a daddy. And And I'm not trying to, in that, alienate the unmarried and the single at Westside. It's just my place. And so maybe being gracious to me in that, we try to make sure that we take care and serve the single and the unmarried, but I'm not trying to necessarily, again, alienate the person that's not in that place and make them feel less than. It's just my personal story where I'm at right now, whereas when I didn't have kids, my illustrations obviously didn't have anything to do with kids. And so I think that's one of the an important thing. Other than, boy, I love this ministry, and I love the people who serve it. I don't go to bed at night going, people suck at Westside. I think they serve like crazy, and especially those at a place where they may have more time right now because, you know, they don't have to go to a kid's soccer game or, you know, go home and worry about dinner or what have you and so forth. So, I'm not a great answer for you from a practical standpoint. I love this ministry, man. I do. I love it to death, and I think, you know, 99% of the singles and the unmarrieds are fantastic, at least the ones I've come across. So bless you.
I would say be some of the first people to sign up when someone in your community group has a baby, be the first people to sign up to take meals, that kind of thing as well. And I mean, I know some of my friends are going through house renovations, provide meals for their families as well. I do know, Neil Holland, that you're a very good cook. So that is a practical way of doing that. So there you go.
Maybe it is a springboard off your question. Every once in a while, we've had people ask us, would you ever do a singles ministry? Would you ever do a college ministry? And I always give the same answer, and it's no longer funny. But I always say, well, yeah, our singles ministry is Westside. It's called The Lobby. And our college ministry is what we do. It's predominantly what we do. Philosophically speaking, I really don't believe in segregation in ministry. And so I want marrieds and singles. I want, white and black. I want old and young in community groups and serving together and really fight hard in starting things new. It doesn't fit with our philosophy of ministry. It may fit with other churches' philosophy of ministry. And we've said to people, look, if you want to go to a specific college ministry or a singles ministry, then, man, be blessed. Here's a good church that has it. And people have left for that reason. And that's okay. But we won't, we'll try very hard, let me say it that way, never say never, but we'll try very hard not to have a ministry here that's, all of a sudden becomes age-specific. Again, not that that's a bad or necessarily a wrong thing, we just don't want to do it here. Because I think there's great health for a 23-year-old single woman to be speaking the life of a 45-year-old daddy, and vice versa. I think there's great health in that. I think a bunch of 45-year-old daddies speaking to one another's lives, I just don't think it's healthy. And the people that I'm most attracted to here at Westside are the people that are younger and they're loving Jesus and serving hard. People that drive me nuts in this ministry most are mainly guys, my peers. They drive me crazy. They drive me nuts. So, We love our singles and unmarrieds.
That was a question in the back there, yeah.
Is it possible, or how do you break up with your non-Christian boyfriend who's very supportive without turning off of Christianity and making Christianity sound like a rule?
Yeah. It's a great question. If that's your situation or someone close to you, I feel for you. Oh, yeah, the question is, how do you break up with a non-Christian boyfriend who is supportive, but they're obviously not following Jesus without turning them off? Without being flippant, you can't turn somebody off who's never been turned on to Jesus. And I don't mean to be flippant when I say that. Secondly, the biggest call in your life is to be obedient to Jesus. And so you need to trust in God's care, that God's care loves your boyfriend or whoever this you're talking about more than you do, believe it or not. I know sometimes that's hard to believe. And again, I'm not being flippant when I say this. I mean this with all my heart. Thirdly, I think there needs to be great repentance on the person who's breaking up with them for making decisions that's causing this now. I think there needs to be great repentance. And those are hard. But it won't get any easier. And so there's a trust factor. in there where you just, I think you repent. I think you go hat in hand. I think you honor Jesus and you trust in the sovereign work of his Spirit. And you also, I think anytime, and I say this to my staff all the time, not all the time, but I remind them, when we go into certain situations, whether they're difficult or not, well, especially the difficult ones, we have to lay aside expectations in those. And one of the expectations in those may be that this is supposed to go well. That may be an expectation you need to lay aside and go, this may not go well, but I need to do it nonetheless. And if it doesn't go well, that doesn't mean necessarily it was bad. I think there's a lot of good decisions, right decisions, hard decisions that don't necessarily go well in the midst of them. And that's leadership. That's obedience. And leadership and obedience are difficult things at times. So pray much. Get those around you that love Jesus or support you, because there'll be some difficulties. Expect some texts and emails back. And expect the enemy to really, you know, come after you. That's why I talk about on the front end, making those decisions on the front end, making those decisions where you don't lead down to this point. But again, who amongst us hasn't made decisions that you have to deal with later? So I feel for you or whoever you're talking about. I really do. It's not easy at all.
Over there.
Are you talking about the question about, is this it just tonight? Is that your question specific, or will we do another one of these?
Yeah.
If there's a desire, certainly. Yeah, absolutely. Happy to do so. Yeah. And I think just by attendance, I mean, anytime we've done something like this, whether it was Sex in the City or Sex in the City Part 2 or, you know, those. I think there's always been, because that's the demographic of Westside. I think we could do one of these almost every month, and I think there'd be people that would show up. I think so. Yes, if there's interest for certain. When, I'm not sure, April or May. Probably May, April. I'll be at a luau.
Yes, he will.
Who are you asking?
Lord? Are you asking me or Norm? Okay. Wow. I've heard it said. Oh yeah. Thank you. So bad. What are your? I know. Just feel your eyes. The question is, what are your viewpoints on soulmates versus being able to be married to multiple different kinds of people? Is that what you're asking? Okay. I've heard it said that if there really is only one person in the world for you, then only one pair of people have to make a mistake and it screws up the whole rest of the world. So I would say that the idea of there being only one person for you is probably a bit of a romantic notion. But I do believe that God has best for you. And best for you generally falls in the line of, are they a Christian? Do they have the same values as you? Are they called to the same kinds of ministry as you? Things like, say for me, for example, I live in the city. I feel called to the city. I feel called to this ministry. I'm not going to marry some guy who wants to go live in Cranbrook. Because, not because he's a bad guy or there's anything wrong with him, but that our callings of ministry are unaligned. So I think there are those things more to consider than whether or not my soul comes alive in his presence, because that's not, I don't think, true. But I do think there are qualities of people that align better with you, for sure. You can probably add to that more.
No. Okay, that's good. Yeah.
No,
that's okay. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I entirely.
God
created Eve. Yeah, gave to Adam.
God gave Eve to Adam.
Mm-hmm.
So, are you asking how do we know who it is that God has picked for us? Okay. And the first question is, right, if God has chosen people for us, why do we end up divorced? Is that right you're asking? Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, the hardness of our hearts, I think, would be the answer to that question of why we do. And the way I would answer the question, Courtney, to you, and my general take on this is simply, you know, the one you're married to is the one that God has given you. You know, we can sit there and wrestle with, you know, is this the only... No, the one you're married to is the one that God has given you. I think you can go around in circles and look at this. But I think when you're in your relationship, that's the one that God has for you. No ifs, ands, or buts. So I think to sit there and to wonder, boy, I think I've blown this. No, you haven't. You haven't blown it at all. At all. You don't have to question that ever again. That's the one that God has for you. Other questions?
There's
right here. Oh, right here. Right here.
There's
one.
Two.
Uno dos.
You go
uno
ahead.
Dos.
What is your comments, guidelines? I don't know. On communicating regularly and hanging out one on one when you're just as friends.
I think it has to be clearly defined. They have a significant other, then that's a no-go zone. The question is, what is your take on hanging out, being one-on-one when you're just friends? And then the added part was that they have a significant other. So, I don't know. Really, just asking the question, doesn't it lend itself to the answer? I don't think that's a very wise idea.
Good. That's a good answer.
Thank you. Then you had a question back here?
Yeah, I was just wondering, Norm, since you have seen kind of the latter half of like divorce and the emotional breakup and that sort of thing, as a single person, what are things that might be a heads up or an FYI about marriage that I might not have a healthy perspective on that only people who have been married and have gone through a divorce could have seen and experienced, like things that you can kind of better prepare?
Yeah, I've spoken on this before. The question is, you know, what are some telltale signs? What are some red flags that would suggest that perhaps I'm heading towards divorce? What are some things along those lines that I need to keep a watch out for? Here's the fact of the matter. I don't think you should just marry a Christian if you're a Christian. You should marry someone who just loves Jesus. It's not enough just to marry Christians. So when someone says, "Hey, I'm wanting to bring my boyfriend or girlfriend to Jesus, when they come to Jesus, it's going to be great." No, it won't. No, it won't. No, not necessarily. You want to marry someone who's passionately in love with Jesus, number one. Not just, you know, they can put the stamp on. You want to live and move in life forward with somebody who's going to encourage you, challenge you, and when you speak into their life, they're receptive, and it's a good thing. Connected to that, the adage that says, hey, even in the church, people get married at the same rate of those outside the church. That's a very true statement. The numbers are very similar. What isn't talked about is those couples that pray together, serve together, attend together, give together, the divorce rate goes way down, way down. And so I think when I talked about on the front end having some standards and some guidelines, that if you're dating someone that doesn't like to pray, doesn't like to serve, doesn't like to give, doesn't like to worship, doesn't like to read, doesn't like to do any of that, and they just claim to love Jesus or know Jesus or they claim to be a Christian, that's a red flag. It's just a red flag. I'd get out of that real fast. Because when you get into a marriage, again, that won't be cured. That will only be exacerbated because they're going to stop working because they've got you, right? They've got you. Or you've got them. And so I think those are big. I mean, those are big ones. And going back to the question about, is it okay for the man to be asked? Yes, but at that point, dude, you better lead that bad boy. You better lead, because whether you want to lead or not, you will be held responsible, whether you want the responsibility or not, biblically speaking. It's your responsibility. You say, well, that's the way you read it. No, that's the way it says it. It's not the way I read it, it's the way it says. And so so that's really important. So, and that is the role. So if you're in a relationship, ladies, with a guy that ain't want to do it, man, you... That's good English, isn't it? Doesn't want to do it? Get out. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. And I'm married to a strong woman. I love strong women. I mean, they're awesome. I'm married to a strong woman. I love strong. She spends, my wife is right over here, she spends more time with my kids telling about Jesus. You show up in our house at breakfast, she's leading through memory work. She gets them into the Word. She spends the majority of the time. I'm in and out real fast. I'm gone in the morning. I come back later. I don't see him today. She's spending... That's awesome. It's not that I have to do it all. I just got to make sure it's done. My kids don't come to church with me on Sundays like most of the staff. They show up with my wife. They go home with my wife. But it's done. My responsibility is to make sure that happens. But as far as good, strong women, man, I love good, strong women. I love them. They're money. But you gotta make sure that guys are leading that. It's a telltale sign. It's dangerous. And if the guy says he's got no time, but man, he is on level 12 of Halo 3, man, or whatever. I mean, get out. I don't even know if there is a level 12 in Halo 3. I know my 9-year-old.
Don't admit it if you do.
My 9-year-old. Beat me in chess 3 times in a row last night. That's all I know about. Yeah. Yes. Stephen.
Yeah. Why is there this weird dynamic at Westside? I think it's partially because there's so many people who know each other. But there seems to be a fear, at least this is what I've heard from my side of things and just from talking to guys, that you don't want to ask girls out because they all know each other. They're all talking about it. And...
Well, there's worse reputations.
Yeah.
I just don't know why there's this weird sort of fear. Like, you can't just be open and say, oh, yes, we went on a date, it didn't go well, you know, that's it. Or it went well, we're going to go on a second date, you know. There's just this weird atmosphere about West Side
of the... Norm's looking at me like, you answer this.
Yeah, I mean, the question is, there's a weird dynamic, perhaps at Westside, about everybody knows each other and asking people out. Stephen, I don't have an answer. Some of this stuff I don't know about, honestly, and so I don't. I think if your heart is pure and you're asking girls out and you're going to treat them like a sister and honor them, and I think that's awesome. and don't let anybody bother you about that. Now, if you're a creepy guy, which I don't think you are, we have security. And we do for creepy guys. And you're, but I don't really know how to answer that. I'm not in that world.
I can much. Try.
Yeah, sure.
I do think there's a, I agree with you. I do think there's a bit of a weird dynamic. And again, I'm privy to a lot of information because a lot of people talk to me about stuff. So I know a lot of stuff about people. You know who I'm talking about. I don't mean I know a lot of stuff, but anyway, I do think sometimes people get reputations for asking lots of people out. If you get accused of a certain thing, it's always a good idea to maybe take the information you're getting, really search your heart. I think sometimes when you have a dynamic of asking out or expecting to be asked out a lot, there is maybe some discontent in what is happening in your life, and it may be a good idea to look through some of that stuff and, you know, really ask, why are you asking these people out? Are you asking them out because you're legitimately wanting to date them, or are you asking them out because you just want to date somebody? And so I think there's some of that dynamic that does happen at Westside for sure. People ask out lots of people because they just want to be in a relationship. And some people ask out lots of girls or even guys because they are feeling led into that relationship. So there's those are two different motivations for sure.
Right. And I think the second part of that is just that there's so many great people.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to go wrong.
That's true. Good job. Back row.
Your Twitter handle is what, Stephen?
We're not allowed to tweet this week, Norm.
Starting Sunday.
Kelsey?
How can married people support the unmarried or the singles?
Yeah, I think things like this, I think very practically. I think also, and this is where I need to be challenged, and people have challenged me, and I think rightly so, is recognizing, especially in a ministry like ours, you know, that a large majority of the audience sitting there is looking at you as a single person, and so you have to make sure that your application and your teaching keeps them in mind. I also think I think there's, again, going back to my philosophy of ministry, our philosophy of ministry, and not having segregation of age groups, is I think you have great value in terms of speaking to them. Again, I'm repeating myself when I say this. You have so much that you can share and speak into the lives of people that are older than you, different stages of life, you know, may have kids, marriages, or whatever. Part of my motivation, quite honestly, in planting Westside was I was doing college ministry, and I was looking at my college student leadership. They loved Jesus more. They knew more about Jesus. They were on mission. And I said, doggone it, I'm sick of these guys sitting in this little room off to the side in this church. And so we planted Westside out of that. And I think you just need to understand that you can speak into any situation, because there's too many married people who have mortgages and kids and use those as excuses to not serve. It's brutal. Brutal. And so I think you need to feel very valued and know that the leadership here sees you in that way and will never put you to the corner and say, well, you just don't have the experience. That's certainly one way. You know, we have a single guy as one of our elders. You know, some of the guys, they got married since we hired, but no, that's not a true statement. That's not a true statement. I take that back. Re-doozy. But just highly valued, loved, and have as big a role in this ministry as anybody else. But we need to keep on serving you in ways like this as well. And then in areas of specific leadership of ministry groups or whatever, we've got lots of singles that I think I can say that with assurance, that, you know, lead our teams and so forth. We love you, man.
I have a number of married friends, like significant friends, who are in this room tonight because they love me. And I've found like the best thing is that they invite me to be part of their families. I'm Auntie Laura to a bunch of mostly little boys in this congregation. And so, you know, they invite me to be part of their families, which is super significant. And I think it's good to be friends with married people and to be like friends with them. So they share their lives with you and you share your life with them. And
does that answer anything else that you want to, maybe you want to speak into my life, our life, lives, in terms of things that you wish that we would take into consideration? No?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I think we need to just keep on honoring you in that and helping you in that, understanding the stage in life. Yeah, no, it's a good word. I appreciate that very much. What, Kel, time, Fatil?
9:15 almost.
I dropped out in grade 10 French.
Do you want to do back row and then front row?
9:15?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll take... if you feel like you need to leave or you have to leave, feel free. And we'll just kind of go until we start.
There is no more.
So, yeah.
Back row.
My question is for Laura.
Well.
I want to correct you with a statement. So I obviously fell in love with a woman who loves Jesus. And I appreciate that, the way that she does that. And she speaks the truth in a way that makes her vulnerable as well. And I appreciate that. And so I know you don't know me very well, but I wanted to ask if it doesn't work out with her.
We can talk after.
I don't know if that's a...
It's not a really great proposition. If it doesn't work out with her, you're my second choice. Yeah. But that's... Yeah. I'm not waiting for you if that's what you're asking. Okay. Okay. We had a question in the front row.
You talking to me? Yeah. I came out wrong. I didn't mean it like that. I'm not wearing my glasses, so I can't see.
Yeah.
And, yeah, just wondering, like, what are your thoughts on actually, like, how to lead them? Because I know that strong women, like, can challenge the guys a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's just hard to really lead them in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're not that difficult.
Sweetie, how should I answer this? I'll be really honest with you, and I wish, who was I talking to this about? Oh, yeah, I won't say who it was, just somebody who had some dinner. The question was, you know, I like strong women, how do you lead strong women? You know, the person I was just talking about this with just recently, one of the biggest misnomers, let me put it this way. One of the biggest misnomers when you go into a marriage is that every decision you come to, you have to come to an agreement on. It's a load of crap. There are a lot of decisions in marriage that you on either side have to die to for a marriage to work. It's impossible to come to a total agreement on all decisions in a marriage. And so... My response as a man on how to lead a strong woman or otherwise is that you have to follow the model of Jesus and be willing to die to a lot of things for her. And I think what you need to do in addition to that, or not in addition to, but part and parcel with that, maybe a better way of putting it, is you need to be consistent with your and in your walk with Christ. You do those two things. Be willing to die for her and set a solid example and continue day by day in providing and setting that example. I think you will do well with anyone, strong or otherwise. But our example as men is Jesus, right? How do we lead? We lead by dying. That's how we lead. We lead by dying. Do I do that well all the time? Certainly not. No, certainly not. Yes, not in any way, shape, or form. But God gets hold of me, and many times come back and certainly apologize and repent for times where I don't lead like that and become a bullheaded, domineering type of individual, which that's when tension is created in my house, because Nicole is not going to, you know, just take that sitting down. I think that's a fair statement, sweetie. So that's when the problems arise in our marriage and relationship. And but yeah, we got to die for them. And I think any woman is attracted and wants a man who's willing to die for her.
I think it's also important to differentiate between a strong woman and a contentious woman. Mm-hmm. Strong women are women who know what they think and they're in a strong relationship with Jesus, but a contentious woman is someone who is contentious and argues against you.
Absolutely.
Those are two different
things. Yeah, two different things. I've said this, and I always get in trouble when I ever say it, but I'll say it anyways. The two groups of people that are the most problematic in the church are wussy men and women with chips on their shoulder. And the church is full of them. It's true. It's true. I think, Your Honor. Yeah, you know what? It's never easy. It's never so cut and dried, right? I mean, anytime you give, you know, I'm going to make 3 points and I'm going to define it in two ways. I mean, there's always, you know, well, what about this and what about, yeah. My goal, really my desire tonight, if you want to whittle it down to one or two things, is I want you to think Christianly about your dating. And I want you to think Christianly about the stage of life you're in right now. Like, to really be thoughtful. And I mean that, thinking Christianly about it. And that's our call, right? How do we love God with all of our minds? We think Christianly about our dating relationships and our situation, our space and time right now. So you need to think Christianly about how you relate to the opposite sex, how you do your dating relationships. You need to consider the other person as more important than yourself. So if you're in a situation where in that season of life where, man, it is... I mean, your time or your money or your health or your commitment is just such that to involve yourself in another relationship is not considering them as more important than yourself, then you need to not get into that relationship. That would be how I'd whittle down my general theme of my talk. Think Christianly about this. So that's not always cut and dried. I get it. But we are so conformed. Like our dating relationships and our sexuality in the church has been so conformed to the patterns of this world. I mean, it is so conformed to the point we have arguments about stuff that is so black and white, and you just go, really, really, really. And so that's my gist. We need to be transformed by the renewing of our mind. And it goes back. I love Laura's comment, you know, taking it back to the Word and just going, I got to filter my dating relationship through the Word of God. That would be my answer.
Jeff?
Bartholomew. Yeah. Thaddeus.
So let's say if I'm married category and there's also called a full-time ministry, like how does that change? Like realistically,
that you want to be married, but you're feeling called to full-time ministry? Oh, when I planted Westside? I mean, I'll be really honest with you, and I say this with... oh, man. Can I share? No. How did my marriage change when I planted Westside? Well, I was a pastor for about 12 years before that in two different places, 10 years at Willingdon and then 2 years at a church in Coquitlam. After about 6 months of planting Westside, our marriage, we've never gone through a tougher time. It was brutal. I think at that point, the enemy was having a heyday, and to my shame, and I never thought I would ever use the word in my whole life, we used the word divorce in our relationship at that point. I say that to my shame. It was that bad. I remember having the elders praying over me, man. I was fighting depression. I had two physical attacks by the enemy in my bed. It was bad. And, there's a lot of moments where it slammed doors, me getting in my car. I remember, driving as far south as Tacoma one time. And it was just really a hard time. And at the same time, Westside was doing well. But I remember times getting off the pulpit, preaching, coming down. My wife is sitting there, and she looks at me and goes, "I don't know how you could ever preach that after last night." And we went through that time, man. It was really, really hard. And fought through those times. Much repentance and fighting for this and not wanting the enemy to win, and knowing at the same time there were things going on here that I think God was calling us to, and I think really the enemy wanted us out. I truly believe that. And so in terms of going into full-time ministry, if you're thinking of going into full-time pastoral work, you're not yet married, and I think you just need to be really, really... really, really straightforward and honest with the person that you may get into that relationship with and let them know. But again, I wouldn't, my wife didn't want to be married to a pastor. I wasn't planning on being a pastor when I first met Nicole, and that happened after we got married. So, things can change, and but what you're also going to have to fight, Jeff, is women have a certain impression of what a pastor's wife should be like. And it's like, the nicest lady in the, in the lobby making muffins and soup and borscht. And, it's just, some people have that, and it's just not true, right? They need to be who they are personality-wise. And your expectation is, they're your spouse, and you're their spouse. And they're not free labor, those kinds of things, which many churches... And you got to protect her, and have no more expectation on her than anybody else. So, and the only thing I would add to that—sorry, I'm speaking too long here—the only thing I would add to that is they need to be truly called to the ministry, in as much as you are. I assess church planters all the time, and we disqualify church planters by how their wife reacts. And who their wife is, many times we will disqualify them because of her, not because she's a bad person. She's not called. And I've had too many days coming back on Sundays going, "I just shut that place down. That was the worst thing I've ever done in my life. That sucked. That was, who would ever come back?" And Nicole said, "Well, you can quit, but I'm going back next week." Then I was preaching, but I'm going back next week. I think you approach it like any other discussion. The question is, I have a lot of friends, Christian friends, that are dating non-Christians. How do I approach them? In my makeup, I'm bold and maybe frustrated that others aren't as bold, but how do I approach them? And I think you approach them with much grace and truth. Mm-hmm. But I think once, once a conversation happens, then I think it doesn't need to continue happening. I think you need to be praying. And there are times where people are, really seeking, what is God's design for me as a single person in a dating relationship, and they really want help or guidance or what have you. Then there's some that go, I totally disagree with you. I hear what you're saying. I totally disagree with you. I think at that point you let it lie. I don't think there's much help in going back and hammering and hammering and hammering. And then you love on them and pray for them, and you're there because, man, we all do things in our lives that necessitate the grace of God and others after the fact, and there will be pieces. There always is. There always is. There always is. And what I mean by that is it will happen in the dating relationship, or as we walk through here at Westside, there are three or four marriages where it's people that are married, believer or non-believer, and the difficulty of those marriages, huge, huge. And we deal with them at Westside. I mean, we deal with them, in our behind closed doors and in community groups and in emails and phone calls and women's Bible studies. We deal with them. And so you just need to be available. But I share truth with love and be gracious, hat in hand, man, and love on them. But, you don't have to keep on beating a dead horse, so to speak.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if they didn't ask again, I would let it lie. Mm-hmm. They come to me, I'm having this problem with my relationship. What should I do? And I'm like, well, the same thing I told you 15 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, if they're coming to you and asking questions, by all means, answer the questions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But sometimes I think we just make the mistake of thinking we're the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to share, certainly. But I don't think, again, if they're not open to further discussion, then I just let it lie and pray for them. And be there, be there, right, for them.
And sometimes in those conversations where people keep coming back and asking you the same question and you keep giving them the same answer, I first absolutely have said to them, I'm going to give you the same answer. What are you wanting me to tell you? Do you want me to tell you that this is okay? Because I can't do that. And just be, very upfront. There does come a point where you can say, this is a pointless conversation because I'm going to keep telling you the same thing.
Yeah. Maybe we take one or two more, and then because people are getting restless and want to go. My man, love this guy,
Jonathan.
So obviously, all of us have things in our past that we're ashamed of.
Yeah, the question is, we have stuff in our past, we get in a relationship, at what point do you share those things? Great question. I mean, the motivation is, look, you want to be, if you're going to get into a serious relationship, you want them to know about you. They want to know, you want them to know about your good and not good things. I don't know if there's a right or a wrong way of doing this. I would say this. There are certain things that I think people have to earn to know of me. I mean, we have to be authentic in our relationships, but we don't have to be authentic in terms of letting everybody know everything about us. I have certain people in my life that know much about me, everything about me, but they have earned that in the same way that I hope I've earn their trust. I wouldn't share everything about me, you know, early on in a relationship. You just, I think that's the hard part of broken relationships, right? Is there's someone out there that knows everything about me and doesn't want to be with me. That's tough. And so I would be very careful in making sure that I don't share too much too early until they're at a place where you feel like this is somebody that I can entirely trust. And again, even then, I mean, we're still going to get in places where people abuse that. I think also, man, sharing it way early is, I don't know, it could scare some people off too, perhaps, because they're not ready emotionally to handle it. Right? I think there's that too. But at some point, they need to know. They need to know. Yeah. One more. Anybody else? You guys are great. Laura, you're awesome. Thank you, Laura, for that. The question about doing another one of these, we'll consider it, talk about it. In regards to some other things we've done in sort of relationship to this one, the Sex and the City 1 and 2, they're up on the website if you want to listen to more specifics. It's a 3-dayer, actually, so we go into great detail. It's the most downloaded message talk we have on our website. Thousands and thousands and thousands of downloads. It's kind of incredible, but it's on there. Thank you for being here. We do love you. Have a great Tuesday night. We'll see you soon.